You are now listening to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop.
She's back, and Daniel Ettinger. What's up, Bishop?
Oh, not much. I'm only back for like, what, one or two episodes, and then I'll be gone again. But
see how you are. So if anybody wants to come on as a guest host, you have your ample opportunity. Now we have Jerry Hershey's going to join us later on for one of those episodes. So he'll be filling in for you, which is cool. I like doing these fill-ins. I need to take a break too.
Oh, maybe I see.
Fill in. Well, no, I said I need to take a break too. Anyway, check out our website, keepithumane.com, for all the fun up-to-date stuff. We have a virtual training coming up, another one called Scratching the Surface of Bites. So if you want to learn about bite investigations and such, it's a really cool course to take. If you don't use the Dr. Ian Dunbar scale, you'll want to use it after that class. And in fact, we even have an episode with Dr. Ian Dunbar several episodes ago. So check that out.
It's like a year ago.
Yeah, either that or longer. Who knows? It's been a long time. And check out check out our Facebook page and our Instagram. That's the Animal Control Report. Make sure you follow, like, share the podcast and all that good stuff. We got a guest joining us here in a second. And then we're also, if you didn't check out our last episode, that's episode 187. Do you know what the penal code is for 187? It's very popular.
No.
Murder.
Oh, all right.
And it just so happened that we were talking to best friends for episode 187. So that was a great episode. You might want to go back and check that out. I got an article to read about a shelter at risk of losing its no-kill status. So you won't want to miss that.
Oh, no. Sorry.
You won't want to miss that.
So we should do visuals.
Yeah, this is great. I'm going to have to put some stuff in here, like pop it up, edit it, all that good stuff. What else been going on, dude? You've been gone for like weeks on end. You got a new haircut. I'm like, what's up, Bishop?
Not much. I keep him busy at work, that's for sure. I've got a couple of trials coming up soon. So I did get the letter from TACA. I will be going and teaching.
Let's go.
So
TACA, for those that don't know what that acronym stands for, that is the Texas Animal Control Association. That's going to be held in San Marcos, Texas, November. You're testing my memory here. 12th, 13th, somewhere in there. So check out actually
12th through the 15th.
Okay, cool. And there's a direct link right on the homepage of keepithumane.com. So check that out. And I heard that somebody might be the keynote speaker coming up.
Oh.
Yeah. So you'll want to stay tuned. You want to stay tuned for that.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if you can hear my dog over there.
But you can hear him.
He's doing the Mooney. He's doing the Mooney. Well, all right. So this episode, we're going to talk about, when is it time to leave animal control? And so have you ever had those thoughts?
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably more recently than ever.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want, well, we'll talk about that because our guest, Daxton Dye, he has left animal control and we wanted to talk about it. So Dax, thanks for taking the time to get on the show and you know, share your perspective, share your stories and your, you know, time as an animal control officer.
Of course. Pleasure to be here.
So let our listeners know, and what they may not know is we actually had you on, but there were some technical difficulties when we recorded. It was my fault. So I'll just put it that way.
Usually is.
It was my fault. but I told you, I promised you, hey, we're going to get you back on. And we did. Unfortunately, it took so long that you're no longer in the industry. But that's actually a cool angle. And I think our listeners would love to hear kind of that process. But before they do, talk a little bit about how long you did animal control and some of that stuff as well.
I started in animal control just a little over a year ago, probably about a year and like 3 months. I only left actually a week ago was my final day in animal control here in Springfield, Missouri. Go Midwest. I mean, it was a long year and couple months, very very trying at times, but here lately is when the burnout really just set in hard for me. And I decided to make a completely different occupational change. I'm done. I'm actually done with law enforcement. Completely went to the far side of being done with anything involving that.
Before we jump into like what you're doing now, were there things that you actually will, you think you'll miss from animal control?
Yes. Guys,
like barking dog complaints. That's perfect. I everybody will miss a barking dog complaint.
I hate barking dog complaints.
It's totally dogs fine, bark though. At things, people inside the house that live here and feed.
No worries, man.
Yeah. So I definitely will miss. I miss my people. I know you have met some of our team down here, Dan, but I definitely loved my supervisor. She is, I mean, through and through animal control. She eats, sleeps, breathes animal control.
Heather's a friend, man. I agree, man. She's I'd work for her in a second.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That was my biggest thing leaving. That hurt the most. Cause I loved working for her. Mm-hmm. Is there any second, every bad case you had, we're going to talk about it tomorrow, whether you want to or not.
Okay.
You're coming in my office. Always there. So that's a huge thing that I'll miss. I do miss the little victories. You know, you get four bad cases, but then you get the one that kind of just enough gas to keep you going. I'll definitely miss things like that. Just little aspects here and there.
Yeah. I think the job is so unique where there are always, even if like, though you did it just a year, there'll always be part of you that identifies with animal control, right? Or find some sort of like, yeah, that was a cool part of my life, man. I did this, this, and this. Like, it'll take you to places where other people will never get a chance to go.
Yeah. I know a big thing with Heather, she always says, like, once you're an ACO, you're always an ACO. It's not, once you've been past the certain point in animal control, there's no going back.
None.
You've crossed that bridge.
You'll hear dogs barking and go, where is it? Wait, what's going on? So can we talk a little bit more about what that burnout looked like? What was your final straw where you're like, no, I got to get out?
I had a
couple. If you're not comfortable with that, that's fine too.
No, you're fine. I'm all about education.
And this is the animal control report. We keep it 100% authentic. And yeah. He agreed to tell us his story.
Hey, but we also keep it humane. So if it's emotionally traumatizing to him, we're not going to be mean.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Glad you're back.
I think really a big issue I think we have, I'm going to speak on only my specific area. I think my huge tipping point was just constantly dealing with cases that I could do nothing with. Mm. And I constantly felt like the dog animal owners had more rights than the dogs. I mean, you have these ordinances, you have these things to protect people. And, you know, it's even, you know, for us, even a dog bite. We don't do family bites. We only offer, you know, sign over for euthanasia. But even, you know, if I was out walking in a park and your dog bit me, if it doesn't break, I could have the worst bruise in the world. But if it doesn't break skin and draw blood, it's not a bite. And then even if it was a bite, unless I had just, you know, been mauled, but I could have been bitten very bad. And, you know, we would just do a home quarantine. Nothing would really happen with the dog. And I just felt like a lot of the times we were doing nothing. You know, I'm not saying we had to go pick up every dog and euthanize it. But the laws and things that keep us held back, I feel like, really benefit the dog owners, the bad ones. And I just feel like it was just too much. It was just constantly being screamed at by people. I had went to a case the other day. A dog had figured out, it was a pit bull, had figured out how to use a tree to climb its chain link fence. Went after a guy. The dog was maced twice by police. And it bit the guy, but it didn't draw blood. He just had a huge bruise. And he had a couple bruises where you could tell the dog had tried multiple times. And we couldn't do anything for this dog besides a dog at large ticket.
Wow. So you didn't even have like a dog attack or potentially dangerous, something like that in your ordinances?
I don't either.
We do.
What?
Like we do, but we don't. Like it's kind of there, but I feel like it's something that gathers dust. Because the fact that he didn't have blood drawn, it wasn't considered a bite.
I understood.
Yeah. But my hard part is that multiple people have said they've had issues with those dogs. I mean, even after being maced twice, the dog still tried to climb the fence to chase me. But if it gets down to that technical part of, did the bite break the skin? No, he just has multiple bruises where it tried and it just didn't. But it's not to say this dog is not dangerous. And it's just a simple conversation. All we can really do is, hey, you're getting a dog at large ticket for the dog, and you should probably keep it on a leash. But they're not going to. I mean, that's the hard part. Like, it's just, especially on our north side of Springfield, when you've ever been to Springfield, you'll know that's our very low income, low poverty. And most of those people just hide their dogs. I mean, if their dog bites somebody, they just hide it. And they're not cooperative, and we don't really do much. You can write them tickets, but how do you write a ticket if you don't have their license and none of their information?
Is it difficult to get the backing from the police department then on these cases?
Depends who you talk to. We have some police officers that are all for like helping us. And then we have other police officers that are like, man, I really don't care about a dog bite. I just had two homicides yesterday.
Yeah, true.
Yep.
I mean, our crime rate is so high in Springfield that you get it, but it makes your job so much harder. And you're the one getting screamed at by the victims, not the police. So,
how much support did you have from your judges, whether municipal or...
If I'm being honest, I'm not going to say a whole lot.
Fair, man. I mean, I know you don't want to bash the department and things
like that. But yeah. Be careful about what I say real quick on YouTube. I think it goes back to, again, I think it just goes back to there's so much more going on that people really do care about, that animals are, you know, like... Like we said before, animals are just at the bottom of the totem pole. People just don't care. Even our cruelty cases, that was a huge aspect of my burnout, of that I felt like I had cruelty cases on a silver platter. And they're like, well, kind of hard to prove someone else didn't live there in that time. It looked abandoned. And I'm just like, they're literally on the lease. That is their house. I found their dog on their Facebook. Well, maybe someone was baby. It just always gets thrown out for the littlest things. And it's awful. Because I'm like, why am I even here?
I bet a lot of listeners can relate and feel that same frustration. Mm-hmm. I hear it from you a lot, Bishop. I do. And it sucks. I mean, even offline when we talk. And I think that's the part of the problem with our profession is like, it's not taken seriously. It's almost like, well, we just have to have animal control because we have to, but we don't really have to take that profession seriously.
Yeah. And that, like, I've been fighting so, so hard to get everybody, the link You know, I keep bringing up the link to everybody. I make sure that, you know, I'm putting it in my reports and stuff, and I've been utilizing so much of the ASPCA to get my area to recognize, like, no, these cases do matter because they can lead to the things you do care about. Mm-hmm. So I feel you there. I really do.
Yeah. We talked about the link a little last time, too. I think that was with Kelly. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, we had our guest host. And sorry, Kelly. The audio. It was I screwed up. It's on me. Yeah. So we'll have to have her back too. However, they may be doing their own podcast, so stay tuned for that. Humane Educators of Texas, keeping it humane. So you're so right, and I think, like, long term, the goal really is to educate our prosecutors, educate our judges about why these cases should be taken serious. Period. I have hundreds of slides dedicated to why these cases should be taken serious, right? We have people that go on to murder people, go on to traffic people, go on to commit crimes that are, you know, school massacres, those things. And so it's, the link is there. It's proven over and over and over again. It's just I think what happens is we get caught in the moment and they're like, well, I mean, all they did was, like, neglect the dog. Like, why is that a big deal? Let's just, you know, get this case dismissed.
I've had one thrown out because, well, it was a felony case, but he's got other felonies. We're just going to toss this one.
Yep. I've not experienced that personally, but I've heard that before, and that's very, very frustrating. I mean, we have trouble sometimes getting warrants. I had a case, I had three dogs abandoned in the summer outside, no food, no water, no shelter. We posted it for our 72 hours. We took care of these dogs for 10 days straight.
Wow. While they were on their property.
Yes. In the fenced in front yard, no access to a house, nothing. They just had a porch they could cover under. And the judge still denied the warrant to get the dogs. After 10 days of taking care of them, I was like, hey, this house is literally abandoned. No one's been here. No one's responding. These dogs would have starved without us already. And they still denied it. And I had to go back and do more digging and finally found out that the person had a relative that actually was the owner of the house. It was a brother. Got him to come into town and sign me over the dogs. But I would have never got them if I.
Why did the judge deny it? Did they ever give reason?
Probably because somebody was taking care of them.
Mm. Yeah. Animal control was making sure they didn't die.
Somebody was. So how do you prove that? I've heard, you know, I have a similar knowing how my area operates. I know that that's kind of how I would get told. Well, somebody is doing it, so
yeah,
prove to me that they're not.
We've heard that too, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't seem to matter how much we document, and I'm like, okay, but here's the thing, we can't just go to their house every day for the next 8 years until these dogs pass away and take care of them. They are nice dogs, they're great dogs, they were all adopted out at this point to new homes that actually deserve them. And it's like, it's one of those things where I'm like, why is this so hard? Like, we have the evidence that gives you the criteria to sign this warrant and you're choosing not to. And I feel like we run into that more and more. Our prosecutor is actually amazing. So nice. Really likes to back us, but it's the further point of the judges. You know, we have just so much going on. They just don't, they don't care about a few dogs running around. They don't, I mean, we found out that our pit bull tickets, which are supposed to be minimum $500 for not registering your pit bull, that a judge actually thought it was stupid and was just throwing them out. And I'm like,
I mean, well, it is stupid, but
It is, but it's like you guys.
There's a different way to handle stupid.
But you still need to uphold the laws if you're going to have them out there and require them to be enforced.
Exactly. And if I have to do all this work to write these tickets, then there's no debating them. I have a picture of the pit bull that's not spayed or neutered, and it's not registered with us, and no rabies tag. It's like, if you think it's so stupid, then why don't you go reverse it? So none of us have to deal with it anymore.
Absolutely.
But instead they just throw it out, and it seems to depend on the person too. I'm like, because I've had pit bull tickets go through and then other ones not. And I'm like, how does that happen?
How is that justice for everybody?
Baseline. It's a basic law.
Transitioning into your new path. The founder of this show, when it was the Humane Roundup, Michael Hildebrandt, announced last week that he is no longer, after a 17-year career in the animal welfare industry, he's done. He's no longer in it. You know, he worked in the shelters, he did animal control, and then he most recently was working with a vet clinic kind of thing, whatever you would call that, VIP vet care. And so you see it, right? So Dax, like, where are you going? What's your next endeavor?
So my next job, I'm actually doing like roofing contracting for a home restoration company. They do roofs, siding, gutters, interior, exterior renovations. Storms are a big one for them.
Okay.
Which is great living in the Midwest. That's every other day. But yeah, still
tornadoes down by you.
Yeah. I mean, still kind of being in the community.
Yeah.
But definitely because we do insurance claims. So just trying to serve people in a different way.
Did you have experience in this industry beforehand? Or is this something like a friend was like, yo, you should join the team? Like, how did you get connected?
Yeah. So saw the post online, then found out I had an old friend that worked there. Kind of talked to him a little bit. He's like, yeah, man, you got to come over. Like, this is great. And I was like, shot in the dark. Let's just do something brand new, because I just got to the point where I was done with law enforcement, which I had done it for, 5 years before I came to animal control. Yeah. But I just got to the point I was done with the public in that aspect. I was done enforcing laws, and I just couldn't really do it anymore.
And I mean, now you have the eyes of an animal control officer. So if you're ever out at a house doing some construction, you see something that isn't right, you're gonna be like, yeah, all right, I know who to call.
Yeah. I have found out one of my coworkers is scared of dogs, and it is very entertaining, to say the least. We had went to knock on the door, we had a pit bull come out, and I was like, oh, sweet baby. And he's like, and that dog is big. And I was like, yeah, most of them are big babies. And it's like barking, and I just walk past it and pet its head, and he's like sitting back there like, man, is that dog gonna bite me? And I was like, if it was going to, it would have already.
Right. Definitely.
But that's funny.
Yeah, people love also talking about their dogs. I use that honestly at my job to like get in the door. Talking to people. Everyone has a dog that meets you at the door, and I'm like, oh, I see you have a Shih Tzu, and they're like, oh yeah, that's my baby. And then they want to talk to you now because you know their dog.
Yeah. I mean, building that rapport. You know, there's definitely skills that you've learned being in law enforcement that'll be beneficial to you in that respect. That's for sure.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah, it helps. I mean, everybody, especially we work a lot in like the bigger neighborhoods. Obviously, you have to have homeowners insurance with us. So a lot of, lower income is rentals. That's really rough for us. We want people who own the house. Mm-hmm. So those little ladies love their dogs.
Well, let's change gears a little bit. As I talked about early in the show, we did have best friends on last episode, episode 187. So if you didn't see that, excuse me, please check that out. I'm going to read an article that I wish was out, last week, but it wasn't. So it's out. This is coming from the Hawaii Public Radio, hawaiipublicradio.org. And it was released on August 2nd, 2023. And the headline is Kauai's Humane Society at risk of losing no-kill status. What? So, like, just the title, before we even jump in, like, what is that title? How do you see it, Bishop?
That they're being responsible, hopefully.
Okay, wow. I see where you're going. Dax, did you deal with that no-kill terminology at all in Springfield?
Not really. I mean...
Would the public ever ask, like, is this a no-kill shelter or anything like that?
No, not here. I mean, they know...
They got too many puppy mills.
No, they know. I mean, if you see a post about us online... Sorry, my wife's leaving.
Bye. Make a cameo. Come on in. Say hi, honey.
No, everyone, I mean, we've had people, even people with, we've had fosters come in from rescues. And they've accused those of, you know, going back in kennels and chasing dogs around to do heart sticks for euthanasia. Oh. And I'm just like, where did you hear that?
Yeah.
Because everybody has the perception of the dog.
Cameo. Hey.
Hi.
There's the better half. That's what I'm talking about.
The prettier half.
So it sounds like no kill in, well, so you, but I mean, you're not too far from Casey Pet Project, and I think they carry that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, really, for us, everyone thinks the second we pick up a dog and we're going to go kill it. I've had people run after me when I've caught a dog, like getting it out of the street.
Yeah.
And, like, tried to take it from me. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, you're not going to go take it to kill it. And I said, I don't know why you think that. We work with several rescues. We've help transport all the way to Minnesota for dogs. We have, she doesn't work for the city, but she does our temperament testing. She's drove dogs all the way to New York, fostering from us just to get them to a rescue. So it's just a huge misconception. Everyone thinks we're going to kill every dog we bring in.
And that's one of the reasons why I hate the terminology. So let's jump into the article again. This is the Hawaii Public Radio, written by Sabrina Bowden. Kauai Humane Society at risk of losing no-kill status. Animal intakes is up 8% nationally. At the Kauai Humane Society, there have been similar trends, Executive Director Nicole Schaefer Crane said, and that may grow. It is expected that in the second half of the year, that is going to climb even higher, Schaefer said. This year may be the highest year of intakes that we're going to see, and the outcomes have just decreased significantly. It's a trend we've seen across the nation, Schaefer reported, which has affected their ability to ship animals to the continent as often as before. So it sounds like they were sending animals here to the mainland. The shelter is able to accommodate about 150 animals, but currently has more than 400.
Wow.
KHS, that's the Kauai Humane Society, its no-kill received its no-kill designation at the end of 2019.
From to who?
To keep its no-kill status, the Humane Society needs to maintain a 90% positive outcome rate over the calendar year. The other 10% can be for medical and behavior euthanasia. Because we're open admission, we take your animal, your strays, no matter the breed, size, age, disease, anything, she said. You know, that's just something we don't have a lot of control over. Since they don't have control, if animals are diseased or in pain, the Humane Society may opt to euthanize them for their own quality of life. Moving away from a no-kill status means KHS may have to euthanize healthy animals. If things continue on the trend that we've seen the last 2-3 months, that'll be very much what happens if we're no longer able to refer to ourselves as a no-kill shelter, said Crane, Schaefer Crane. Among the ways the community can get involved, including spaying, neutering pets, adopting, fostering, and financially supporting KHS, which could mean helping pay for off-island adoptions. So that's the article, and I just wanted to put it out there and kind of get everybody's feedback. Just start with you, Dax. Like, where are you at with that?
One, that is alarmingly terrifying. I mean, I know we've been over numbers before, and it's been hectic, and we were over maybe 15 dogs. I can't imagine being over, like, 250. I do feel like I could see where that'd be a huge problem for them. I mean, being in the Midwest, we try to go everywhere to get dogs out. I mean, that would kind of be a nightmare transporting and would be very expensive for them. I don't know. That's tough. I mean, I think everybody wants to be no kill. I think everybody wants to, you know, have that luxury and, you know, people think great of you. But I think too, it starts coming down to like what you can actually manage. And that's even for the people, even shelter staff. No one's going to work in that environment. No one. You are going to burn someone out so fast, no matter how much they love animals. And then these dogs aren't getting taken care of. And now you're just doing them a disservice because you want to save all of them instead of trying to figure out which ones have the best quality of life and the best outcome. If you have, to me, if you have a 12-year-old dog that's, you know, kind of genuinely healthy, but you have a 1-year-old dog, yes, the 12-year-old dog is kind of healthy, but it's had a way longer life to me, and that's going to be the dog I pick to choose, because a lot of people won't take seniors either. And it sucks to make that decision. Nobody wants to be responsible for that. I get that. But I think a lot of times people really need to start buckling down because everywhere is overrun. And it's a nightmare, and it's only going to get worse if people don't start making decisions.
Bishop, what's your thoughts on this?
Animal welfare is about the humane treatment of animals, and the humane treatment includes the shelters. And if they have more animals than what they can provide proper care for and keep their staff members mentally and physically safe, then it's no longer humane. And there has to be something done. Great. They want to get them to the mainland, you know, fantastic, but we have also a huge problem down in Texas. The number of dogs that are coming up my way to Wisconsin from Texas is astronomical. So somewhere along the lines, we got to reduce the population. There's more animals than what we as a community, as the United States.
And why are we adopting this no-kill status? Like, what is the purpose? What was the purpose? That's what I want to understand.
Warm, fuzzy feelings.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, I don't want them to just euthanize 250 animals to get down to 150. Like, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. But it's the question of why are we held to the standard of an arbitrary 90% benchmark? And why is there even an argument about it, right? As I often talk about on the show, and I said it last week, is can't we just take and adopt the name Smart Animal Shelter and save the majority of animals through responsible treatment? Like, how is that not a thing? That's all we're trying to do is save the majority. And if we have to put some down out of those 400, I'm sure there's some animals that are not in great shape or have behavioral issues, right? And so, and I'm sure there's more than 10% because that's the threshold that Best Friends or whoever puts that no-kill moniker on. And so I don't know. I struggle with it because these are the consequences of creating an environment where we have to live to this standard.
I'm happy for the article that you read. However, I wish the title would have been different. Hmm. I wish the title would have been, you know, shelter in distress or something like that. Forget the losing no-kill status. Get that the fuck out of here. Talk about the facts of The shelter is in need of funding, of volunteers, of help, of laws that are requiring spay and neuter, you know.
Low-cost spay and neuter options in the community. Yeah.
There could have been a complete change in the narrative. I think the article is great. I think it lays everything out there. It's that title I struggle with.
Well, and it goes back to that same title that we're, you know, dealing with in the aspects of why I think it's divisive, period. And we talk about inclusionary terms in 2023, and in that group, that organization is not doing it, man. They're not, unfortunately, not doing it.
I mean, I definitely feel her on the front. You know, she says in the article, you know, they take all the strays. I mean, being a city entity, we have to, if you live in city limits and you bring the dog to us as a stray, we have to take it. Mm-hmm. What helps us in those aspects is that we still aren't a no kill. If we get that dog in and they start acting aggressive, we can put it down. I mean, we've had days, we have a vet come out on Wednesdays, and that's our, you know, medical day. We can take up dogs any day to be euthanized, and we do still. But I mean, we'll start, you know, knocking 5 to 10 dogs out that morning if it's on the youth list, because we can't house these dogs like people want us to. They want us, well, maybe in 3 months. No, we have a 50-day limit from when they come in. 50 days, if they are not adopted, then they go down. And that is if they, that could even be a puppy. Wow. It's usually not. We work pretty hard on doing that, getting them out. Most rescues do pull from us. The problem is a lot of rescues pull from us like at day 45.
Well, the other thing too is the idea of having to be this no kill. Like, why do they feel they have to be that? And then why are we 250 animals over? Like, what does that mean for the shelter? If they're at 400 animals, are we warehousing? Do we have the staff to properly care for them? Like,
not a chance.
Right? The balance is off. Really quick, we're going to do the pick of the litter here in a second, but I wanted to get final thoughts on this. Daxton, we're going to test your memory skills because you actually did the pick of the litter in the episode that didn't air. So we'll see how close you get to your answers.
Yeah, we'll see.
Bishop, did you have any final thoughts on this?
I don't. I wish I would have been there last week.
Well, you weren't.
You know what, Dan?
She's a busy lady.
Let's see. That week I was at a friend's wedding.
What's so more important? No kill or a wedding?
That's
depends on who you ask, yeah.
And it's a little bit of a tough one there. But
if we're lucky, one of their executives will come on. That's what I want. I want somebody up there that can put that can push for change. So I got this cool little I don't know if you can see that. I got this cool little medallion. And check out their slogan on this medallion. No more homeless pets. Perfect. Let's rock that. Let's rock no more homeless pets. People get that, right? That's way better than the other slogans. Just saying. I'm gonna start wearing that to conferences. All right, let's jump into the pick of the litter brought to you by the Keep It Humane Podcast Network. Check that out at www.keepithumane.com/podcast network. Bishop, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Dax, all right, are you ready?
Yeah, I was just going to
say. Yep, I'm ready.
Now, this is current. I don't want you to switch stuff up. So just keep it current.
All right, so what is your official title?
I am a project manager.
All right. How many times have you been bitten?
I would say at least 6 or 7.
Okay, it was 10. Why are you holding back, sir?
Well, in 1 year.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't try to keep track of my faults,
Fair. What animal do you identify with?
Probably an English bulldog.
Okay. That's not that much of a change, though. Right?
English bulldog,
groundhog.
I was kind of like thinking groundhog again, but sometimes they run really
fast.
Let's
see if you get one. I wanted to just get one right, and that you'll win. You'll win a prize, bro.
Now I got to really think about it. Okay.
Your go-to snack.
Oh, man, what would I have said? Oh, I love snacks. I want to say it's probably like sweet tarts or beef jerky or...
Not even close, but we're putting that down.
What did I give you last time?
Cheese puffs.
Oh, you know what? I get on these kicks, and I might have been in a cheese puff time frame then.
Fair.
All right, he's got to get this next one, Dan.
You better get this one right, man.
Have you adopted an animal you rescued on duty?
Yes.
Ha, which one?
Amira.
All right.
My little white fluff ball you saw here.
Aww.
All right. Let's see. Emergency lights are amber.
We have amber.
Why'd you tell us emergency last time?
Maybe I wrote it down wrong.
That's highly likely.
That's probably more likely.
Truth. Some people say they're emergency, but like, I mean, if you shut the truck off, they turn off. They're not like a blue. They're kind of just there. They're kind of useless.
Yeah, nobody cares about them anyway.
No.
State or department required certifications.
I'm pretty sure we have both.
You told us no last time.
Guess what? I'm like, what was I thinking at this point? I mean, we don't have to have certifications to start the job, if that's what it means.
Okay.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Maybe you were working towards something at the time.
I want to say at that time, I think I was about to do my my Animal Cruelty 1.
Okay.
So maybe that's probably what I was thinking at that point, because I've had two classes since then.
Okay. PPE, things like firearm, baton, OC, taser.
We have batons and OC spray, but I do not use either.
Okay.
Okay. And if you could ride along with anyone, who would it be?
My man, Dan.
you got a couple, right?
Yeah.
Dax, if you did a ride along today, you'd be sitting in an office all day. Well, actually, that's not true. We went out. We had an amazing horse transport we had to do. Great job by the team. It was such a – if I could recorded that and then send that out for, like, teamwork – there were five of us, and the communication and the ability to just get these horses that have never been trailered. There were two of them. Them in a trailer. We did a great job. So you would have got to see something like that.
Yeah.
But most of the time I'm just chilling in the office, but we could go make some work, bro. So if you ever come to Southern Cal, hit me up.
For sure.
Why would people have horses? And do you have county areas?
Oh, yeah, we're huge. We're one of the biggest counties in California. I think the second biggest, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And
I guess I thought you were more just San Diego, not county.
No, we don't know where I work, so I don't know why you said San Diego, because...
I don't know.
I'm just trying to keep it a mystery. It's fine.
Well, you can find anything in Springfield. I mean... dead center city limits downtown. I mean, we found a horse in an empty lot. I had no idea where it came from.
Wow.
I had two cows come into one of our art museums lots one day. And of course I was on light duty, so I'm trying to figure it out from the office. It was great.
Yeah.
Well, Dax, you're always a friend of the show, and you'll always be an ACO in our eyes. So we appreciate your time in this profession, and know that it's not uncommon to feel the way that you have felt. And so we appreciate that you shared that story today, and hopefully our listeners did as well. Did you have anything else for the show before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. I mean, I appreciate what you guys do. I mean, keep doing it. Keep education going. I think that's the only thing that can really improve this profession is getting people on board, getting people to listen. So, and getting rid of all these misconceptions of what we do and how we do it and the type of people we are, I think will be huge for people in the future.
For sure. Bishop, what else you got?
I don't have anything else specific right now. We need to keep working towards, we're not the dog catchers. Mm-hmm. We don't need to no-kill facilities. We need responsible facilities and responsible owners.
Yeah, we need to find ways to find, you know, resources to stop having these veterinary deserts, if you will, and shortage of veterinary worlds. Like, to make veterinary medicine so expensive, it causes a lot of the problems that we see today, whether it's finding a way to get general health care for your pet, for them to, you know, get the animal in so they're not negligent, or to stop the overpopulation. And it's naive to sit here with millions of dollars in our accounts and only really do things that are, in my opinion, surface level things. We're not doing things that are, you know, creating scholarships for people to go be veterinarians. Like, they could put their money where their mouth is. And I'm talking all these organizations, not just one. I'm not singling out any. All these major organizations that have millions and millions of dollars, you know, start working on these opportunities to build resource centers in our communities that need them. And that's going to help the problem.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, remember to check out the website, keepithumane.com, part of the Keep It Humane Podcast Network. Again, keepithumane.com/podcast network. Use discount code AC Report for 10% off of your next order. And like, share, rate the podcast. That's going to help us the most. Like, share, rate us. Like, share, and rate us.
Like, share, and rate us.
And as always, we like to say thanks for listening and keep it humane.
Main. Your video totally froze.
Never.